This is tape recording number 5110C25A, FAC number 6A. A tape recorded lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 25th of October, 1951. The title of this lecture is The Service Facsimile. It is 33 minutes and 27 seconds long. Copyright C, 1951-1974 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by the Flag Audio Unit of the Flagship Apollo of the Sea Organization. In this lecture, Ron describes the nature of the service facsimile. Due to damage of the original master, this lecture is briefly interrupted several times. And now, here is L. Ron Hubbard.
Techniques which you have are now many. There are lots of them. Don't let yourself get confused with the fact that there are more and more of them, because that's just more and more of a technique. There's lots of ways to do this thing. There's lots of ways to work out a geometry problem. Well, there's also lots of ways to work out a case in Dianetics. Now, I suppose that amongst all these ways, there is a best way. I don't think that best way has been entirely gone over and discovered yet. The best way. Some of these techniques are better than others. We know, for instance, that an old technique, such as just the running of n-grams and secondaries in a case and nothing else, we know that that technique has a tendency to undermine an individual's self-determinism. Why? Because you're bypassing his conclusion. And if you bypass an individual's conclusion, you break him down into apathy. If you keep proving to him that his conclusions were otherwise than his, he goes into apathy. Eventually. In other words, you are getting up the stuff which made him that way to a large extent, but at the same time, you're bypassing the material and getting him down the tone scale, so you're bringing him up the tone scale on one end and down the tone scale on the other end, so a person remains relatively static. As a matter of fact, you can so thoroughly threaten some conclusion of the past, which is long buried and forgotten, that an individual all by himself can go into apathy. And latch up in a chronic somatic. Now, you've seen individuals who have been audited for a while, and they all of a sudden turn on a chronic somatic. Just one pain someplace, and they keep it. What's evidently happening there is that your auditing is bucking up against their service facsimile. Some old conclusion. And your auditing is therefore attacking what they have elected to be their survival. As a consequence, the service facsimile then simply turns on stronger and stronger and stronger, and they use it more and more and more. Now, this should be of interest to you in the resolution of cases which have been audited in the old fashion. This should tell you what you have to do to such a case. It should tell you with accuracy what you have to do with such a case. What you want to do is get this case up to a point with start-stop decisions, various conclusions this individual has made in his lifetime. You want to get this individual beyond that point of having to have that service facsimile. And then you just tackle the service facsimile itself and knock it out. Until you have identified it, you are going to maintain it around. That is to say, it'll stay around until it's identified as an actual incident with sufficient reality and conviction on the part of the individual to accept it as an actual incident. At that time, you reduce it and get rid of it. And you get the idea of how to fix up somebody who has been audited into a chronic somatic. Now, is there any difference, actually, between that and just a chronic somatic and how you undo a chronic somatic? And no, there isn't. What happens with a chronic somatic is that life keeps demanding of this individual that he get rid of a service facsimile. And he keeps turning it on, and life says you've got to get rid of it, and he's got to turn it on to invalidate everybody. And so it's just a seesaw back and forth. Somebody gets somebody in his environment, or somebody who's been connected with psychiatry or some other nut. And that's blunt, but you know, I made a survey, and we have only one gentleman from the field of psychology, who really, I don't guess he could be from the field of psychology, who has ever been worth anything. He's very valuable. That means that out of any area, you can get somebody. But do you know that of the great failures in Dianetics have come out of the field of psychology? It should be interesting to him. Why? The field of psychology specialized in the fact that a man had to be adjusted to his environment. It said you have to use your service facsimile in order to get along. It not only said you have to use it, but said we're going to give it to you and we're going to confirm it for you. And therefore, every time you started to audit anybody who came out of this field of conclusions, but actually the conclusion summed up to the fact that an individual's conclusions were necessary. And you know, a neurosis was actually what made a writer write. That's gorgeous. I mean, how crazy can we get? A neurosis made a writer write. Well, this is because they couldn't make anybody get rid of their neuroses. And they'd see that individuals would get one rid of one and just turn on another. Actually, they weren't turning on another. They were turning on another part of the same service facsimile. They weren't even transferring engrams. You get the idea. So that here you had a whole study which was devoted to the confirmation of service facsimiles. Now, Dianetics did tend to search for and attack and get rid of service facsimiles, didn't it? It tended to do so. And so individuals from such a field would feel themselves tremendously threatened in what they considered to be their survival, and they would kick back blastingly and drastically against this thing. It is not a problem, then, of occult different conclusions or some mechanical difference of vested interest or selfishness or meanness on the part of psychology, psychiatry, medicine, and so on. But these boys are running on service facsimiles and Dianetics and take it away from them. I'm telling you this for a reason, not to rant and rave about the subject of these fields. It's a good reason. Telling you that when you get an individual who has a chronic somatic, what they call psychosomatic illnesses, that this thing is being confirmed to him in his own environment every day. And that he uses it and uses it and uses it and uses it. Therefore, his environment tells him he cannot survive without that service facsimile because it tells him, is the only thing he has with which he can invalidate the individuals around him. You get the idea? So an individual comes in here to the foundation, he wants to get rid of a chronic somatic. He's got hips a goodle of the twerp woman. And you tell him, well, we can get rid of that for you. And he's perfectly willing to go along because, you see, you're part of his environment. But now how is he going to invalidate you? He's just going to turn that thing up, turn up the rheostat on him. He's going to get worse and worse. He really is going to get worse if you start tackling it blunt without tackling his environmental problem, his computation. If you don't tackle right off the bat his first echelon of self-determinism and rehabilitate it and square it around so that he knows he can stand on his own 2 feet without a service facsimile, he's not going to give it to you. So individuals will go on wearing glasses and all sorts of things. You ever see a pre-clear start writing you notes as an auditor? He starts writing you reams and reams and reams and reams of things that he thinks is wrong with him. These things are all wrong with him. He's sure, and he gives these things to you. Well, boy, you can just bank your bottom dollar that there isn't a single one of them has any validity in them. What it means when he does this is that you haven't hit the computation on his case. That's just symptomatic that you have not hit the computation on his case. And he'll keep writing you notes and telling you what's wrong with him until you hit the computation. At that moment, he will stop. He will cease writing you notes. Consider a chronic somatic exactly that. Notes being written to you because you haven't hit the computation on the case. There it is. Visible evidence. Glasses, hips a goodle on the whoop-whoop, whatever it is. Doesn't matter. But there it is. He's handing it to you as part of the environment, saying, this is what's wrong with me. This is what's wrong with me. I didn't do it. Not my fault. And you see, You see what you do by attacking me and tackling me and so forth? I keep getting swellings of the medulla oblongata all the time. So he keeps offering this. And it will get tougher and tougher. You can actually take a pre-clear without hitting his chronic somatic. You don't even know he's got this chronic somatic. Maybe he only has a vague idea that he has it. You can start auditing this pre-clear, and the next thing you know, you can have turned that thing on full so that he now has a psychosomatic illness because of auditing. Now, out of pure salesmanship, you can sit there and talk to this pre-clear, yaggity, yaggity, yak, and tell him how much better he's going to feel and everything else, and all of a sudden you'll lay aside the service facsimile. Bing, you didn't hit the consultation. He just laid it aside. Now you say, you see what Dianetics has done? It's wonderful. And you go out. He goes out into his environment again. 5 months later, he's still got it. He went into his environment again, and no salesmanship existed in that environment, but the salesmanship that told him he had to have this service facsimile. So he turned it on again. Even if you had to some degree desensitized the actual engram, which was that service facsimile, he would turn on what was left of it. If you didn't get the consultation with it. Now you see that note writing means I haven't got the consultation on the case. The continuance of a psychosomatic illness says haven't got the consultation on the case. Continued low level on a tone scale says haven't got the consultation on the case. Anything that remains wrong with this pre-clear that he keeps offering to you, and he's offering an illness, he's offering you a low tone of voice, he's offering you how bad he feels, he's offering you actually to this extent what they have mistakenly called transference. He will offer you a service facsimile to the point where he's frankly saying, eat me. Because in earlier generations, that is what happened when he went by the boards. He got eaten. So he'll, in other words, keep offering you more and more, apparently, of his self-determinism. More and more and more self-determinism. He'll give away his self-determinism so he can keep a service facsimile. Now, he's keeping that service facsimile with malice aforethought. Don't ever think it otherwise. He knows computationally in the bottom of his mind what he's got hold of, but he won't let himself know that he knows. Now, let's just put this thing together then. Let's in a package. You know that a mental aberration is part and parcel of a physical body. That's mind and body. It's the physical effort that comes in, and later on, somebody can manifest the aberration out of it. We know that on a light level, people can take phrases and dramatize them. That phrases all by themselves can cause aberration. Or sometimes you get rid of a phrase on an individual, you feel a lot better. Don't overlook the fact. But by processing of phrases, you're validating language to him. And one of the things that's wrong with him is the fact that he considers language as too vital. So we have a lower echelon than language. We have mesh and organisms. And his handling of those things, his decisional level. Now, this is much more important in auditing than language. Though we may not have suspected at first, it is much more important. There'll be a computation, which is not a word phrase computation. All of those mechanisms, that phenomena, exist in the mind. But it's your job as an auditor, you just slice right straight on by them and get to a more basic cause. You've got about 8 ways from the middle to get to that basic cause. You just speed the guy up, if you can, to a point where he doesn't have to be wrong. Actually, a howling success does that to an individual on a purely operational level. He goes out and he gets a tremendous amount of applause from the Qatar Society of America or something. And he renders a solo on a bassoon or something. And everybody says, my, he's the best bassoon player. And so on, the first thing, this guy doesn't have any chronic somatic. Well, he has been able to lay aside, at the moment, his service facsimile because of success. What he's doing is running at a higher rate of speed. His concept of his own ability is raised to such an extent that he finds out that he can win. The only thing is he'll fall right back on the computation the moment he has the slightest little down dive in his success level. He'll go skid again. As a matter of fact, the manifestation of what they call a manic depressive is the rising and falling and rising and falling on concept of success and failure. What the manic depressive, who is insane, considers success and failure is a very interesting thing. A success on a psychotic level, a success may be an enormous success to this individual if he has merely succeeded in bumming a cigarette off of you. This would be a great success to him. A failure might be as slight as being unable to get the match to light that cigarette to light. Might put him in a completely depressed state. You get the idea. It's in small form and it's on big form. But what are we fluctuating between? Sound like Dale Carnegie. Now it fluctuates between success and failure. Successes and failures on each one of the dynamics. However, we can define success a little more actively. Success is survival. It is ability to achieve or launch oneself upon courses which lead to survival goals. Failures are a little gradients of death. And failures are great in the magnitude that they depress the survival of the individual. So it's pretty easy to define them. Now let's go into even more basic. Success is being able to maintain, obtain, create, convert. You know that formula in the axioms? Conquest of myths and all those descriptive action words. Well, each one of those on myth. Now, in other words, in order to be successful, a person must have been able to realize his conclusions to all these action words on pro-survival objects in getting them going and contra-survival objects in stopping them, or people, objects of people. So you see what the formula is. He's got to start, maintain, conserve, preserve, or obtain pro-survival motion. He's got to have that. And he's got to be able to stop or radically change in any one of the action verbs contra survival motion. So you've just got those two factors there. And change means that he's got to take what might be contra survival and change it into pro survival. He's got to be able to convert. All this sums up very simply. One could say that one's health depends upon his dangerousness to his environment. Just that. If you just go on that basis, one's health depends upon one's concept of his dangerousness to the environment. When did he decide he wasn't? You'll find that you're hitting right center line on the whole problem without very many fancy frills. You say that's very strange, maybe a woman considering herself dangerous to her environment. Oh, no, that isn't strange. How does a woman consider herself dangerous? She cuts other women out of boyfriends. If she feels that she does, she may not do so. If she feels that she might not be able to do so, she'll do so. But if she is perfectly confident that she could, she won't. You get the idea? She doesn't put it to test, in other words. It's her ability to dress, to acquire favors, to perform her tasks, duties, and would you shoot a couple of drivers? In other words, to conduct her life on a survival level, she must continue to be able to make her weight felt in the environment. She's got to be able to make her weight felt. How does a woman make her weight felt? How does an artist make his weight felt? How does a writer make his? How does an engineer make his? How does a teacher make his? How does an auditor make his weight felt? Very simple when you reduce it down to that standing. The guy has concluded to make his weight felt. Now he doesn't. He fails. If he fails there, he'll fail here. He'll fail all along the dynamic. You know how you felt when you have gotten through a tough session where you felt that you had done your pre-clearance good And you found out you didn't do him any good.
He's worse, if anything.
You say, ah.
Yeah.
Your emotion level goes way down, doesn't it? Now, how do you feel when you work on a pre-clear for a few minutes and all of a sudden, bing, they don't have a headache or something? They say, gee, that's fine. You could misinterpret it on a lower level. I mean, on a higher level, you could say that this is because you have received appreciation. Oh, no. Appreciation's down there along 1-1, unfortunately. We're talking now about band 20. You'll find appreciation, approval, and acceptance, and so forth down there below 4. But let's talk about a guy who's really in good shape. Oh, he made his weight belt. Just like that. If he didn't make his weight belt in the environment, if he did not prove that he was a punitive element in his environment, his concept of his punitiveness goes down. Simple. He goes in, auditing session, audits somebody for a couple of hours, the end of that time, the pre-clear is in good shape. Just fine shape. Next session, so forth. Therefore, the way his own concept of his environment and all of his own dynamics. Now remember, when I say his idea of his dangerousness, he includes in his dangerousness the dangerousness of man, of life, everything. See, he has improved the whole thing clear across the band the moment that he has achieved the success. All right? People get so bad off that they have to gamble in order to achieve such a success. In other words, they've got to leave it up to something nebulous like chance, whether or not they succeed or not. You'll find that most gamblers are pretty bad off. These gamblers that hit roulette wheels and so forth, as a gambling is fun on its own basis, but you'll find people who really gamble are really crazy because they've handed their self-determinism over to Lady Luck. They are so completely undangerous to their environment that it's left to some strange monitoring factor, some system of betting on the horses or something of the sort, as to whether or not they have any effect upon their environment. See how that would be. All right. Your service somatic and its use is an index of that. The person finds he cannot affect 5, the fifth dynamic of life. Well, he's got a service somatic to explain it to life. Of course, he's got it for himself. He starts out with this thing, by the way, by offering it to somebody else or something else, and it kicks back on him. Actually, you look these things over, you see that they generally arise in childhood. You see some little kid, bad shape, gotten bunged up or something. Some other physical force, some other human being, physical force rolls into him like a General Pershing tank, and it's actually true that he doesn't have the physical strength to stand up to it. He doesn't have. But his own mental health, his concept of himself, demands actually that he go down fighting, even though it kills him. He goes down fighting with complete integrity as his own self-determinism. He trades the apparent death which would result for a service facsimile. Now, do you get the idea? He doesn't die at that point. He cuts in a service facsimile. There's another mechanism less than death. He, to some degree, gives up his self-determinism to live. And this is really your central computation on a case. These service facsimiles aren't really very mild. They're rough. But he didn't do what he was supposed to do, which is go down fighting. He quit. Out of pain, out of miscomputation, out of something of the sort, he quit. And said, all right, I give up my self-determinism here by determining for myself a twilight.
I won't die here. I'll just go into a twilight, and I will show everybody around here that what they have done to me, and that's the best way to stop them anyway, is to hand them this semblance of a injured, sick piece of his life and so forth. So this is the best thing to do for him. But six of them. Only what? You see how shabby that piece of reasoning is. That's a very shabby reasoning. I don't care if he was only 3 years old and his parents insisted on beating him with a club every day. The way life is designed to run smoothly, and I mean smoothly, is on a self-determined basis. Never give up in the face of physical force. That's what self-determinism says. Don't give up. The second a fellow does, then there's got to be some other reason. And he grabs this shabby piece of reasoning and says, well, he's been given a nice service facsimile. The inexorable character of Theta says, at this point, Bud, you're supposed to die. If you can't maintain your status, that's the end of you. If you're too little, and you find these forces too great, you haven't got nerve enough to stand up to the agony which you're facing here. If you're going to fold up and quit at this point, you're supposed to quit all the way and do it all over again. But we temporize. We say, well, we'll take a half step. We'll take the service facsimile, and this demonstrates that we were too sick so that we couldn't possibly have gone through with the basic plan, and so now we've got to carry around this darn service facsimile. But the funny thing, when I say service facsimile, of course I mean precisely an N theta moment, an N theta facsimile, an engram, a moment of physical pain and unconsciousness, which exists as a theta facsimile or N theta facsimile, which is stored and which may be used by the individual. He can choose to use them or not choose to use them. Now, you understand that pain facsimiles, engrams, are used by the body in its blueprint and construction. Definitely used. It's information to know how that particular stage of the organism fails. How do you retain that information? The only way you could possibly retain it is by the N theta facsimile of its failure. So the body actually starts to build again, and it modifies its planning in accordance with these N theta facsimiles. So they have a survival value that says, how did the organism fail? But they don't have a survival value to the individual in one generation, unless he accepts his self-determined death at a point of failure. Now, right away, he said, well, let's see, how did the organism fail? And this is it. So he keeps offering it to himself and to everybody else, and there it is. Now, this happens quite frequently that an individual does offer one of these service facsimiles. It happens every pre-clear or two. In fact, there isn't one alive today who isn't packing one. One, two, or a dozen. And it has a very precise anatomy. This engram begins ordinarily as just an engram, some sort of an upset. At the end of this engram, you will find that the individual is convinced that he was wrong. During this moment of cut down consciousness, during anatta and so forth, he's convinced, while he's still staggering around, he's convinced he was wrong. He turns around and offers the service facsimile in lieu of it. Generally, there's some injustice involved. In the real, tough, serviceable service facsimile, it won't figure. It won't figure. It's such and such happened, and he knows that it happened, but nobody will permit him to believe that that was what happened, or they won't let him take that out as to what happened. There's justice involved, and so on. And this particular engram will have on it something that can't be computed at the end of it. Now, undoubtedly, a person could go through birds. He could go through all manner of automobile wrecks. Everything under the sun could happen to him. And he'd just take it in stride. These would be what you would call just standard N theta facsimile. Nothing. said it's junk. Operation, childbirth. Prenatal AAs. It doesn't matter. They're just junk until, all of a sudden, somewhere along the line, a fellow gets an engram, usually in the first 15 years of his life. The end of which won't figure, won't compute. Now you as the auditor, you come along with your technique of start and stop motions, of scanning, of letting him try to figure his conclusions, working him over the track one way or the other, maybe even running an engram for him or running a grieve charge or doing almost anything you can do, but keeping your eye on the ball that somewhere along the line one of these service facsimiles is going to show up. Actually, you know that it's there. You just take one look at the individual and you will see that he is carrying it. He's carrying the somatic of his service facsimile claim as day. It's it. What can't be computed about it? Well, you can't compute it for him. You've got to work him around on the track on subjects allied to that service facsimile until all of a sudden he himself triggers it. Now, the chances are you're going to have to run out quite a bit of that service facsimile before the computation perceptics begin to show up in it. You do this by effort process. You won't get it by standard process. You'll skip it on standard process. Start working it out on effort, and you'll find out a lot of things will start to show up about this thing. You'll find that it normally has on it, God knows how many thousands of locks. And if you start to work it by effort processing, if you want to really recognize the service facsimile, it's by the number of locks which start to fly out of it. Because there's lots of them. Now, when you're doing this, you are worrying about this lifetime. You are worrying about one lifetime only. The chances are he's going to try to back in to earlier stuff. You may have to work some of that earlier stuff. If you do, try and work out as much of it as you can. You'll find the service facsimile which he's using in this life got connected to and that he pulled in with old past life engrams. That's why those things show up, facsimile of it, because they match his service facsimile, evidently. So, or match one of his service facsimiles. He may be using two or three, doubtful though. He's usually using just one syndrome. Now, you run enough of this old stuff to get this started again in this lifetime until he finally triggers whatever it is. The computation, the missing computation. He'll start to wonder about something, and then he'll start to worry about it, and you keep him scanning over areas or into areas which are associated with that worry, if he won't go on worrying about it. And you keep working with it, and all of a sudden, a hidden incident that has this characteristic. There's a little tab of it showing, usually. There's just that much of it showing, plus the amount that's on his body. And you go down the time track, and he'll keep telling you, oh, well, that's there. In other words, he knows it's there, but he refuses to recognize it as a service facsimile until you hit the computation on the end of it. Now, he'll start to get an overall computation on his life. The overall computation on his life will start to narrow down to one about an area of his life. Then it'll start to narrow down about an incident. And then it'll start to narrow down about a part of an incident. And it's the part of the incident in which you're worried. Somewhere he surrendered. Somewhere he said, from here on, I can't live. Somewhere this happened. And there's one of those on every case. Now, if you can just release that, you're going to have people walking around about 10 feet tall. Let's take a 10-minute break.
This is tape recording number 5110C25B, FAC number 6B. A tape recorded lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 25th of October, 1951. The title of this lecture is The Service Facsimile. It is 45 minutes and 56 seconds long. Copyright C, 1951-1974 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by the Flag Audio Unit of the Flagship Apollo of the Sea Organization. In this lecture, Ron describes processing the service facsimile. Due to damage of the original master, this lecture is briefly interrupted several times. And now, here is L. Ron Hubbard.
Okay, I want to call your attention again in service facsimiles. What an individual does with motion at various levels of the tone scale. In other words, what causes levels of the tone scale? What causes levels? Your first level in is just inadequate handling of motion. Utilization, transfer, not very upset about motion of any kind. If you go down the, as a matter of fact, high level, of course, motion is pleasure, handling motion. Then it deteriorates if you get down to the area we're interested in because it is the area of the service facsimile. The first antagonism, that simply is just receiving efforts and batting them back. And theta efforts. Any effort like that. Retaliation. Person takes it out. As a matter of fact, you can see it best manifested. And an individual will somehow or other get the idea that you are maybe attacking him, that you are motion or something. So he retaliates. He retaliates without provocation. Is your first symptom on that band. You say, it's a nice day. And he looks at you. And he says, well, you needn't make cracks about it. Or he just looks at you rather resentfully for having spoken to him. That's what he's doing with emotion, you see. Now, he takes in more emotion and tries to freeze it on down to 1.2. At 1.5, he is taking in motion and not giving it back out again. He's holding it, damping it out right there. That's 1.5. He doesn't give motion back. He tries to destroy motion. This manifestation is he becomes angry at motion in his vicinity. He demonstrates anger. Now, anger is holding. Holding and damping out of entered motion. And the motion can have entered rather deeply into the individual. When you're processing people with effort, you will find out that when you're processing a 1.5 motion, this doesn't mean that a 1.5 pre-clear, but you just happen to be into a 1.5 facsimile area, trying to damp out that motion is very interesting because it's sort of frozen. You get it out very slowly, very slowly. It's frozen to some degree. You have to play it from all angles, all vectors. Work it and work it and work it, and the guy will continue to be out of balance in the engram. Work some more emotion. Get this, get that, and so on. You'll find out that the way he's handling this is not on the subject of a somatic, but he's handling it all through his body. And he has a feeling like his effort will be, let's say the blow came up from his feet, then you will get the motion, his motion, all through him of holding a motion that came up from his feet, crushing it out. It's a very sticky sort of an engram to monkey with. However, it's not as bad as when you go down, let's say, to 1.1. Now you've gotten to where he's not just holding the motion, but he's trying to adjust to it. He's trying to be the incoming motion. He's trying to vibrate somehow to it or adjust to it in some way. Now this is your propitiation. Covert hostility there, yes, because every once in a while he'll find an area where he isn't succumbing to that motion and he'll try to snipe to it. But there, he's trying to be the willow tree that is bending in the wind. Now we get down lower than that, and we find out that he isn't just letting this motion, he's becoming more and more the motion, which hit him. See how that would be as you go down the tone there. Grief, a person is filled with this motion, and evidently has no motion of his own. He's all this motion. If you've noticed a person in grief, there, really flabby. A person who is running in anger, you pick up his hand like this. You pick up the hand of a person who is in grief. Just flop. Now, when we get down the line a little bit further, it is just more of the flop. Until we get to a point where a person is the motion. And that's 0.1. When he is the counter effort. You go this way with a catatonic. He may also be floppy, He may be something, but if you stiff him and put some effort up here on his hand, you get the idea. Antagonism. Here's antagonism on your band. You come along, you take the guy's hand. Pardon me, that's 1.9. Here's 2.1. You come along, you touch the guy's hand. Now, here is about 1.9. Here is 1.5. You come along, you touch this, he freezes on it. He's liable to freeze on you. Here's 1.1 to some slight degree, with a moment's lag, and see, you're not watching it now. This works out in terms of on a letter on a desk. You come in on somebody who's happened to be in a service facsimile at 1.1. Actually, it isn't very important where people are on the tone scale now. You can change them so darn fast. But it's very interesting. You go in, here's an individual. You give him this letter. You say, now you answer this. You answer this letter. Sure. You walk out the door. 2 days later, did you answer the letter? Yes. Are you sure you answered the letter? Well, I forgot. But I will answer it. See, he's again going along with your emotion. Now, a little bit lower on the level, if you touch this person's hand. You touch this person's hand, you don't get any reaction. You can move it here and there and so on, but it will hold shapes. Pardon me, it won't hold shapes yet, that's lower. But it will stay in a more or less its own shape, but you can move it around. But you could take this person's hand and you could put it over here in an ashtray, and there'd be a lag on taking it out of the ashtray. Very bad lag. In other words, you could do something damaging to this person and they wouldn't jump. You can actually walk into this person and say, here's your death warrant. Sign on this one. You have to sign it, and then you can execute it, and they say. In other words, they go along with the motion on command. That, by the way, is the level of hypnosis. Now you get lower down on your band. You'll get where it shapes. You can put a person into the weirdest shapes, and they'll stay in these shapes. Now, you want diagnosis, there it is. Because what kind of an effort are you looking for? What are you going to do to find the individual's own effort in a service facsimile, which is... Is there any? Now, in a 1-1, there's a little bit. Then you don't look. So you got a little power. You got a little effort. You can process some effort out of it. But on those lower bands, you can't. That's why you can't treat psychotic with effort processing. He just can't find enough of his own effort in the service facsimile to do much about it until you have actually moved him a bit in the service facsimile. So what do you do with a high level? That's simple. On a high level case, you simply knock into it, kerbam, bam, and you say, what is the effort to do something or other? And they'll give you an effort. And what is the effort not to do it? And they'll give you another effort. And you can go on processing. Next thing you know, you've wound up in the service facsimile and you're processing it out. Yes, it may go slowly. Because also, there are all tone bands in it, usually. So that there are various levels of it that you have to address differently than others. But it's all more or less the same. You're asking for his own effort. So you can go into it directly as effort, right at the beginning, if a person's high enough up the tone scale. And if a person is too low on the tone scale, then you go at it in reverse. Then you start to ask for the lightest possible computations. And the computation can be so light as to be merely that you invite him to recognize that there is such a thing in existence as himself, as part of a human race. ARC. Now that's the lightest level you can hit it. You can just say, well, you do exist. ARC. You exist because I imitate you and you see that I exist, so therefore that you probably exist. And you get the guy's reality of his own existence up. So it goes from well up on the tone scale, a point where you just hit effort, just knock efforts out, and you'll run into the N theta facsimile. Down to the bottom of the tone scale, running down through lesser and lesser sharp computations, broader and broader computations you have to get until you finally get down to the broadest computation of all, of ARC, you exist. Because at that level, as I wrote on the board here one day, I am not just the guy's computation. Now, in short, your problem of diagnosis on case entrance is as simple as touching somebody's hand and seeing what he does with it. It's as simple as that. You can even go to the point of feeling muscular tensions. You know about where they are. So what are they doing with that muscle? If that muscle is so bad that you can put your finger on it like that and the dent stays in it and then comes off. Now, you watch, you'll see this is the case. Up at 1.5. No dice. You can't make a dent in that guy's muscle. You see, it's that rigid. He's holding on. What's he doing with emotion? Of course, the emotion that you will process out of the M theta facsimile, his service facsimile, is its key emotion as it descends at each point. Is just exactly what the guy is doing with motion at that point. That's all there is to it. It's so simple that you're liable to overlook it. This fellow has anger. He has an anger reaction. He holds hard on the thing. So, although he doesn't ever appear to be angry, you know the second you trigger emotion on this thing, and you can surprise him on his service facsimile, you say, what is the effort to turn off anger? If you're working him on that basis, if he starts to give it to you, he'll start to get mad. He starts to give you that effort, you see. Now, if you find that the individual does this trick, you're going to get fear as your key emotion that you're going to have to crack. So you can surprise him again. You can say, what is your effort to keep from being afraid? And you can start on conclusion processing. When have you decided to be afraid? When have you decided not to be afraid? When did you decide to associate with somebody who made you feel brave? When did you decide to associate with somebody who made you feel afraid? To start hitting that band. You'll find his muscle tones will change as you work conclusion processing against emotions. You see how this is. You locate what emotion it is in the service facsimile you're gunshotting for. And now you start looking for conclusions on the track with regard to that emotion. Now, doing this will permit you then to uncover an N theta facsimile, the service facsimile at its own emotional level, because you've already, to some degree, rehabilitated the emotion elsewhere in the case. This looks, by the way, terrifically mysterious to a pre-clear who doesn't know what you're doing. He gets better so much faster. And if you know your tone scale and you just look over muscle tonus, just that all by itself, you've got the guy. You've got him pegged. And you shouldn't even have to write it down. It should be such an evident fact to you as I tell it to you. Should be such an evident fact that it should never get out away from you. I mean, there should be no difficulty here. Because what does a person do with motion as he goes down the tone scale? You know by heart what the tone scale is. Starts out antagonism, anger, covert hostility, fear, grief, apathy. And that gradient scale is the scale of what he's doing with motion. And that is a gradient scale of what he will do with any motion you make in his. So you should be able to estimate it, just like that. Furthermore, your pre-clear is sitting there right in front of you with his service facsimile hanging out. There he is. Very definitely, it'll be in terms that he's slightly deaf in one ear, or he's got glasses on, or he's got a pot belly, or he has some terrific idiosyncrasy like smoking. You'll find out, by the way, that tobacco, most confirmed tobacco users, an N theta a service facsimile, what we would call a service facsimile forerunner, which would be a lesser service facsimile. They're a bundle of service facsimiles. There's a lot of engrams and locks that tie on to any service facsimile. So an earlier or later one had to do with tobacco. There's one around there. Yeah?
How many of them also have access where the individual burns?
That's great.
it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it isn't very complex doing a diagnosis, and it certainly isn't very complex working it out. I'll go over some of these points again. You know, this conquest of MEST formula that Theta is trying to create, maintain, conserve, destroy, obtain, so forth, MEST. If you take that formula, and if you work that with a preclear, on the basis of conclusion processing, when did he conclude to? When did he decide to? When did he decide not to? Just on that. And you just take all the objects and motions you can think of and just add that formula up to those objects and motions. You've got a quite remarkable array of straight wire and block scan questions. You've got a terrific number of them. You just add up to the stars. Or if you go at it this other way, to stop, to start, to change, not to stop, not to start, not to change, as decisions anywhere on the bank, relating to the various dynamics and their various parts. You've got essentially the same thing. There's two entrances to the same object in view. One's a little more basic than the other. So you've got, you know very well that a person who is holding hard to motion is going to damp out and stop all motion. You're going to get anger then off of a case. You want to get all the locks of when he tried to put the brakes on somebody else or something else. Now, if you want to get it on merely a mental level, you take it just on anything that is moving. When he decided to stop it, when he decided to start things that were moving and start them and stop them. When he decided to change things. And we, you know, 1-5 service facsimile, you're going to find yourself in a pretty hard time right off the bat trying to get the to-start motion. You will find it easier to maintain a motion with that case. Now, there's another method of diagnosis which you should not overlook because it's the same entrance. Let's just start asking him gunshot questions until we find out what he didn't like with motion. See, let's go about it just in reverse. Let's find out what he did with motion and then peg him on the tone scale. This character can't find very many locks that had to do with starting motions. He can find some that had to do with stopping motions, though. He can find a lot of those. Well, pretty good bet that he's 1-5, you see. It's what he can do. All right, let's find a person who has lots of locks and incidents whereby he let motions happen. He let them occur. And of course, you're dropping below 1-5. You're generally down around 1-1. Now, if you find just merely a bare majority of these things, you're at 1-1 with this service facsimile. And if it's more, if it's getting up to almost 100%, you're down to catatonic. But letting motions happen. Now we see that manifest in the society. The car is rolling toward the curb. And an individual that you would think would have done something doesn't act until it actually hits the curb and bounces. It took the bounce to bring up their necessity level to a point where they'd act. You get the idea? Here's a motion which is going. They won't stop it. These are interesting people to have on shipboard. If things start to happen fast, they'll stand and watch them happen. They'll stand back from an operating motion. Furthermore, they get seasick with ease. Because they can't stop a motion that they themselves start, and they just go down the tone scale, or on a ship. The ship starts moving. One day they suddenly get the idea that they ought to stop this motion, particularly if it's a random motion. And they'll start bracing their feet to stop it. And brace their feet to stop it. They'll brace themselves against passageways as though they're trying to stop the ship. Well, they're at 1-5 as long as they do that. And if everything goes along well, they'll maintain themselves at 1-5. They won't get seasick. They'll just get kind of sore. But when they get down to a point, you ever see anybody that's really seasick? They lie on their bunks. But that isn't what's bad. It's when a guy lies down in the scupper. And you watch his head as the ship rolls and so forth. His head. He's limp as a rag. He can't stop anything. And he can't stop his stomach action. He can't get his balance canals lined up. He can't do anything. The ship just blows. You pick up this guy, blah. There's nothing to it. As far as maintaining himself or any equipment or anything like that, you could put him on a whale watch and he would stand there and run right square into another ship. He just would not be able to regulate himself to a point where he'd do anything about motion. The ship is moving and so forth. You get a guy who is hung up at 1.5 because of a ship flopping around or something, and so he's gotten down to 1.5 and he's still trying to brace it and so forth. You'll find that this bird will cut down the speed of the ship. He will have a tendency to stop the ship for no good reason. You'll hear the engine room telegraph, something like that. Bing-a-ding, cling-cling, bong. Hear the engineers ring, ring, ring. Wonder what the hell's going up on the bridge cabin. Crazy as usual, I guess. And what's the matter? Well, there's a big white patch out in the water out there. Almost ran into something. Nothing there. Same way with automobiles. You'll get somebody will stop a car often and examine it. Say something's wrong with it. Or examine it or stop. Or somebody who's trying to go on a long trip and he won't maintain any kind of motion. He'll stop every place. He can't keep up any time from the authority. He's actually trying to stop a car. He's 1.5 with regard to cars. Furthermore, he'll do the darndest things to watches and clocks, things like that. He'll take them apart. He won't put them back together again either. Kids, when they get down around 1.5, will start doing that. But you can look at then what kind of locks are on the case, and you can generally tell what part of a service facsimile he's in. But remember this about a service facsimile, that it is also an engram. And he can select any tone out of this that he wants. A funny part of it is, it works both ways. If he went into this engram awfully angry, and if he persisted in anger throughout this engram, that's possible to do, you see, because self-determinism can operate right straight through an engram. And if this is really a service facsimile that hasn't just been led down to, but is a sudden, abrupt service facsimile that immediately appears in a guy's life, he would be angry or something like that all the way through this thing. Nothing is stopping him. He's just mad. So he just holds all his motion in abeyance, and at the end of the thing, somebody, bang, hits him over the head and knocks him into apathy by computation of some sort or other. Now you've really got a fancy one. You've got a service facsimile which is being held onto like this, and the guy's effort to get at it is apathy. And they'll both be in the same area. So you see, you've a lot of valence at this point because it's not computable. Because you see, a service facsimile is not computable from various ways. In the first place, its motion doesn't agree with itself. Its motion doesn't agree with what it should agree with. The motion and emotion are generally out of whack in it. Furthermore, the mood that comes at the end with it doesn't agree with the engram as it was entered. Everything is in disagreement mechanically and verbally and computationally, so on, until you've got a beautiful bewilder there. The only thing the guy could do out of this thing is just click out of there. Now, there is a definite concordance between a service facsimile and a death facsimile. They have the same manifestation. You want to know why a guy doesn't get straight recall back in all the way back down the track? It's because of his out of valence flick with a death engram. How do you go? You send very many precursors back on the track, you run them through some past tests experimentally, you'll find out that it's very easy to locate what they were. You just run them up to the moment when they did their out-of-valence flick and they get an impression of their own shape. Simple. But they go out of valence at death. They go into a new epicenter for the new life. So you'll find that a service facsimile is where you get your first out-of-valence, serious out-of-valence jump. Bomb. Now you try to take a person after the facsimile and run him back to periods before the facsimile. He's pretty confused as to where he is and so forth. And maybe you can get him into valence. Certainly you can at the beginning of life, you can get him into valence somewhat. But you get up toward the service facsimile and he starts going out of valence. So there's another test. Where is the service facsimile on the track? The early areas before the service facsimile are merely upsetting. He's in valence or he's out of valence. He hasn't any doubt about it. I mean, it's just mixed up. he is or isn't or something of the sort, but he's not broadly way out available in that area. But after the service facsimile, he definitely is out of it. You see, the service facsimile says, I died. He is out of valence. You've established the fact he's out of valence after that. So now this is pretty jackleg and very rough rule of the thumb, but if you go back skidding down, you find this person is uniformly, well, he's very indefinite about where he is, and he doesn't quite know where he is, where he sits, but it's sort of foggy, and he can swear it around somehow that he's lying in a crypt. Now you get up a little later, yes, he's got some kind of an idea of something or other. Yeah, in fact, there he is. Yeah. Well, now how are you seeing yourself? Oh, just seeing myself. Simple. There I am, running around in a sailor suit. You say, all right, now let's go back. Now, you've already hit the first service facsimile. He's vaguely in or out, and he's definitely out. Between the period that you can find when he's definitely out and when he's vaguely in or out, if this carries forward on all cases, I haven't tested on enough cases really unappreciated yet, you'll find there's a service facsimile in there. Now, there may be a later facsimile on the case, another service facsimile, but it's actually part of the first package. You may get the later one before you get the earlier one, but there'll probably be an earlier one then, too. So you see, there's a lot of ways you can skin this here cat. Pretty easy. You're looking for the engram where he first went out of valence. Has to do with how he handles motion. Now, if that was all you had to know, if all you had to know was effort processing, where is he in valence and where is he out of valence, and run the service facsimile, this would be a very simple subject. Very, very simple, because that is a very simple operation. There's nothing much to running effort processing. You'll find that as long as you were asking for certain efforts and the person remains out of valence in the incident, that you are asking for the counter effort. The counter effort kick him out of valence, because they're what impinged on him. If the effort you ask for seems to maintain him more closely in valence, then that's his effort. Simple. Very easy to locate his effort. Furthermore, you want to exhaust all possible efforts on the thing. Just call him, make him sort out the vectors. Up, down, back, forth, and so on. You know that when a person falls, the impact is going to come from his feet and start traveling up as a pain wave. Impact up as a pain wave. What is the action of the rest of the body against that pain wave? It is a reaction down. Or the pain wave can be such a shock wave, so sharp, that there is no action down. And you just get the pain wave. Now, the pain wave is counter effort, and his reaction against the pain wave is his own effort. You get the idea. Something hits a guy in the nose, his head goes back. Well, don't confuse it. Sure, his head goes back. But what is he trying to do internally against that blow on the nose? They travel around various nerve channels and go back into the brain toward the back of the head. His effort is to stop the pain wave. So his effort is pushing out against that pain wave. Now, you may have to run the counter effort slightly in order to get his effort. But you want his effort, not the counter effort. You don't want the pain wave. You want his effort to resist the pain wave. And if you get that, the pain wave goes out. You get the idea. Now, this is a problem in vectors. You'll find your preclear is mostly confused. When he begins to into an engram, you ask him for his effort or somebody else's effort or counter effort or environmental effort. Ross began to call it environmental effort, which is a very good phrase for a preclear. We understand it more clearly. So you start asking for his effort or the counter effort or the environmental effort. He has an awful time trying to straighten these out. Now, funny part of it is there's a part of him, the file clerk, that doesn't have much trouble straightening it out. So you can just work with file clerk. What's your effort? He'll give you an effort. Now, what's the environmental effort? Well, that's another effort. And you can actually work with the file clerk to get efforts out of the pre-clear. But you see, if you work somebody that's very low on the tone scale with effort processing, what kind of efforts are you going to be processing? Nothing but environmental or counter efforts. Nothing but the effort against him. That's the only efforts you'll be able to find, because his efforts are zero. The shock wave came in, and he didn't resist it. It just ate him up. So what's the effort there? It's no effort. So when you ask a guy for his effort, and you get no effort, fortunately, except in the case of past death, there's always a little tiny bit of residual effort. Always. Dig a tiny scrap of it, maybe, but it's enough to be there. In a past death, it goes down to zero as you run through. Well, in a service facsimile, it doesn't. Therefore, you may have trouble getting a past death every once in a while, because the guy starts to peel off to zero, and you'll start to pick up his actual chill. And you'll pick it up for two reasons. In the past death, he is getting cold, and he's going back towards static. Static is colder than hell. So you got two good reasons there why your pre-clear gets upset a little bit toward the end of past death, and why you as an auditor could be sloppy enough to leave a past death something in re-stimulation. The number of efforts which you're really going to get out of an engram that you are taking all two pieces is astonishing. And there's a point there. The auditor should never believe free clear concerning the fact that there's no effort left on the end. Just don't believe it, because he'll skip it. He'll get bored with it, and you'll let your free clear get hung up at 2.5. You see, he obviously comes up. You can tell when you've got most of the effort out of the engram, because your free clear starts looking like somebody well above 2.5. You don't have to take his word for it. You can look at him and tell where he is. And if he doesn't look or sound like he's above 2.5, you just haven't got all the effort off of the engram, regardless of what he says. Now, this may upset his self-determinism no end. That's tough. It's nice that we have found out that self-determinism is so tough that it's practically indestructible. Therefore, we can beat pre-clears over the head, kick them in the teeth, shove them around, do almost anything we want to with them, as long as we finish off what we've got to finish off in the engram. You understand that? This doesn't mean the auditor's code goes by the boards, but it does mean that you can be tougher occasionally if you're going to process something which is highly authoritarian like an engram, and all the efforts in the engram. I am afraid that the auditor, at the moment he's processing that, is actually taking the role of a counter effort. And the auditor, being there, permits the pre-clear to occupy himself. And when the auditor isn't there, the pre-clear doing the processing does it slightly out of valence, because he's being the counter-effort. But if the auditor is sitting there being the counter-effort, the pre-clear doesn't get out of valence. You see how this can be? So you can get tough with the pre-clear. Pre-clear says, oh, I've run all the effort out of that. I've run everything out of that. There's nothing left in it. I ought to know. It's my engram. And you say, well, we got him up to 1.5 anyway. All right, well, let's just take another little test on this thing. Let's get the effort of the pancreas to exert. You'll say, what? Where are they located? You say, well, the pancreas down here. Just concentrate on this effort somewhere around here. Bomb! This is the kind of reaction which you can get if a guy's at 1.5. Actually, it's a tough job pulling a guy through a 1.5 effort, because he's clamped down on it all the way. He is holding it like mad, and you now have to start transferring his attention off to other parts of his body so that he'll let go of it. And he will let go of it just that much. And then the second somatic turns on, he'll go glam. So now you transfer his effort someplace else, and he's a little bit wary. Now he's watching that slightly. You transfer his effort. You have to get his effort very thoroughly associated with his effort in the shoulder. See, and then you get another bang. He lets it up just a little bit. Sometimes it takes a long time to get out one of these hard holding efforts. But if it takes a long time to get out one of those, think how much longer it takes to find this little tiny 1/1,000,000th of one erg of energy, which is the actual effort of the pre-clear, and start it working on this tremendous flood of counter-effort. Because a guy down at the bottom of the tone scale has been subjected to such a flood of counter-effort that if you, as an auditor, start to get authoritarian on him, you just swamp him. So therefore, when he's low on the tone scale, the only thing you can work him with is ARC. Now, do you understand clearly why a psychotic takes ARC? It's just the fact that he's got such a magnitude of counter effort that the auditor doesn't dare kick him around, that's all. You get him up to 1.5, maybe you've got to kick him around. And you sometimes, when you get him up around antagonism or something like that, you actually have to beat him over the head with a club. So an auditor has to be very facile in the way he handles the pre-clear. He has to be able to shift. Now, he can tell from the mood the pre-clear is demonstrating toward him about where the pre-clear is. The pre-clear is still saying, oh, yes, I feel wonderful. I feel very good. I felt much better yesterday than I ever felt before. Oh, yeah. A pig's eye. This guy, you've got him down there. He's still got an awful lot of counter effort. So you say, that's fine. That's good. It's too bad that you're going to get well in validating the counter effort and so forth. If you've got it in you and so forth. Now, this boy, what can you do for him? You take off a lot of self-determinism locks and so on, make some more theta available. You keep working that way, and maybe once in a while you grab onto an effort and work the effort, and then you work some more locks, and you work some more effort, and some more locks, and some more effort. All of a sudden, you've got him up the line to a point where he's in part of his service facsimile that he's holding. You've got him up then to a 1.5. You can shoot him on through that. But oddly enough, at the point where he gets, this is fortunate for us in processing, the point where he gets antagonistic, he can take a beating. You understand? The point where he gets antagonistic, he can take a beating. And when he gets up to the point of boredom, you can practically murder him without hurting him. He's bored. You say, all right, I'm bored with it too. But not the rest of the effort. Well, if you put it that way. All right. You got him down now to 1.5 again. See, now he'll work. You get up to 2.5, I'm bored with it. Actually, you have to keep shoving down his tone artificially a little bit when he gets up to that point, so he'll finally fire through. Then he'll come up above the level, and you've got the effort out in the end, then. There'd be a great temptation to you as an auditor to walk off from a service facsimile without putting all the effort that you can into auditing. It's a temptation to, because the guy apparently is getting so much better that you underestimate how much better he can get. In addition to that, you're liable to get him up to propitiation and mistake it for tone four. Has been going around all of his life. Car starts to hit him on the street. Somebody drops a plate. It's interesting. You want to test people on these reactions. You can just test them just like that. Let a plate go off the table. A guy high on the tone scale may think, well, hell, it's just a plate. Not do anything about it. So let it go. Guy gets lowered down, will take a slap at it. A 1.5 will grab at it in such a way as to stop its motion and break it. and down below that level, there'll be an ineffectual poke in its direction. And if it can be covert enough, a little further. But the point is that down below the 1.1 level, play fall, it'll just fall. It fell. But you were standing right there. Well, it just fell too quick. Rate of fall. Person standing right here, all he had to do was just pass. Yeah, I had a couple of guys putting up a tent one time. I remember so vividly their horrible efforts of putting up this tent. Terrible. Because every time the tent would move and start down, of course, it would just fall. These guys would be all wound up in the canvas. You talk about Abbott and Costello. These guys were prizes. Now, you see why it is that these people are accident prone. They will start driving a car. The motor starts running badly. They won't touch it. They won't disturb that motion of the motor. They won't change it. Although it could be running without oil. It could be knocking. It could be murdering itself with a motor. No, we just don't disturb motion, that's all. Motion is all over us like a tent. So therefore, we must not disturb motion. Now, a 1.5 whereas a 1.5 will resist changing the course of an automobile. A little bit. He resists changing motion. He resists changing plans. He resists changing almost anything. Anything that is motion, he won't start or stop or change. There's really status quo. There's authoritarianism. There's fascism. Go on. Right on that band. But down in the lower part of the tone scale, it's for a different reason that people go over the embankment. The car starts to go up over a curb, and all it takes is the simplest twitch of the wheel. You see, the car has changed direction. Hit a bump, blow out something. The car starts up over the curb. It would only take a minor click to bring it back into the highway again. They won't make it. They'll just sit there with their hands on the wheel and let it go on. Now, this is more noticeable on an individual, for instance, who's riding a bicycle. The bicycle will start to lean too close to the curb. Got to be riding along the curb, and the bicycle will lean too close to the curb. Now, all this individual's got to do is to shift his body this way, and the bicycle comes right back out. But if it ever goes in a direction, it starts off in the direction too close to the curb, he'll lean his body to make it go the rest of the way. He will go with the motion of the bicycle. You get the idea? Therefore, any destructive, it isn't that he chooses a destructive motion so much as the fact that any motion that happens, he will go along with it. Now, here's the rabble, what people have found to criticize in the rabble. Guy stands on a balcony over in Italy, and he says, boom, 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 boom. Everybody says, three cheers for Alducci. Three cheers. And he finally says, war. You're all going to go to war now. Go get your helmets. Go get your guns. Now you're going to attack so-and-so. Three cheers for Alducci. Sure. Helmets. March. Nothing to it. Enemy fires. They just drop. Kill. Bad soldiers. But a wonderfully appreciative mob out there in the street. Say anything you tell them. Anything you tell them, right or wrong, it is a motion. So they accept it. But remember that anybody can come along right afterwards and tell them, yak, 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 and they accept that too. Now, Ilducci, back in his heyday, used to lecture from one balcony and let the opposition lecture from another balcony. This is a fact. We had such ideas about there was no freedom of speech or something. It was actually a revolutionary outfit existed against Ilducci. All right. He'd give from this side, and the crowd would say, cheers, cheers, cheers. And then they'd turn around, and somebody else would speak from another balcony, say where Ilducci was all wrong. Cheers, cheers, cheers. Turn around, Ilducci, cheers, cheers, cheers. It was just who happened to be there, that's all. Who commanded the bayonet unit? Now, in a fascist state, it is the purpose and principle of the state to reduce people down to a point where they will go along with the motion of the state. And they unwittingly always reduce them down to a motion where they'll go along with anything, any movement. So they set up their own revolutionary groups the second they do this. Therefore, only a government which restores the self-determinism of human beings is a government which is safe. You get the idea. Now, in this country, our populace is not at that point. But they're sure getting there in a hurry. Sure getting there in a hurry. All right, that's beside the point. I hope you have a pretty good grip on this, pretty good understanding of this point diagnosis for motion and what the service facsimile is and what the person will do with motion and how to resolve it, because it's all buttons up to this degree. If a person can't find his own effort, then you've got no business giving him anything but some ARC and some light blocks. And if he has a lot of difficulty finding his own effort, then you had better start finding the start-stop-change lock on the case. And if he can find his own effort, you work it until he gets pretty blurred on the subject, and then you find the locks which belong to that effort and start-stop-decision and so on. Simple, huh? You almost do it by rote. And all the time, there are lots of ways to go about this. There are lots of ways to crack the problem. You've got lots of them. What I'm giving you best I can is these fundamentals. But you can still go into a case of standard procedure and lay it wide open. you can do nothing but run and specialize on shooting circuits off of a case and do it a lot of good. You can get grief charges off of cases and do them a lot of good. And sometimes you'll find your lower level cases just won't mold at all unless you blow some grief. Sometimes all you can do is exercise the guy's memory. I never knew anybody. I never can't remember a time when I walked through a door. Well, you just walked through a door a moment ago. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
You blew a lock. So, you've got a very full toolkit. Let's see, this Thursday, tomorrow, why? We'll button this up. I'll try to give you a little talk on the time track and what you can expect to find on it, its various manifestations, including what happens in groupers and why you can apparently get very early on the time track without doing a guy much good, and so forth. We've got a lot of new answers to that. And now that I told you about El Duce, of course, you won't be able to give me any applause, so thank you.